BBC Radio Berkshire, it's Tech Talk now. Fevzi Turkulp is here. He knows his stuff when it comes to tech. How are you, Fevzi?
Very good, thanks.
Excellent. What we're going to talk about this week, I like doing this because I come at this with no knowledge at all and then I go home feeling like I can have a conversation with my husband on just the things you've said.
Fantastic. Yes, keep it very narrow and you'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. What you got for me?
Okay, so there's two tech news stories this week, and I've sort of combined them because they speak to us about what we should be doing to secure our passwords and so forth. So I'll go through the stories briefly. One is that there's a claim by a Dutch security researcher that he got into Donald Trump's Twitter account, and he's published screenshots of what you would see if you were actually logged into the account. Now, it's possible they're faked, but he claims that he got in by guessing the password, and apparently the password was MAGA2020. And and he previously claimed to have gotten into his account a few years ago, and the password then was apparently "you're fired." Now, this is a good example of why passwords should not be guessable, okay? Because, I mean, you know, it doesn't take a lot of, I mean, probably you could sit down for 20 minutes and go through some of the obvious possible passwords. And
did he spell "you're fired" right, though? Did he have the apostrophe in? That's why.
Well, no, you can't have apostrophe.
So
he spelled it correctly in that there was an E in it.
Right, yes.
You know, it wasn't "you're fired" with four letters, but still. And then the other story is about the Pope. And the Pope, apparently on Instagram, his account has liked a photo of a scantily clad Brazilian model dressed up as a schoolgirl.
Yes.
So, and they're saying that it doesn't, as far as we know, the like did not come from the Holy See. Well, I mean, that's kind of interesting, particularly in terms of being infallible, but it's not exactly a great denial that it came from him, as far as we know, didn't they ask him?
But we've accidentally all hit like or something and then frantically had to unlike, haven't we?
Yeah, but he would have been looking at it. Anyway, that's not the point.
Apparently
the young lady concerned is religious and was quite pleased and said that she now realises she's going to heaven, which is great considering what she does for a living. Right, now the thing about these two stories is basically that it illustrates the importance in both cases of choosing passwords that are unique because not easily guessable. And the way to achieve this in most cases is now to use a piece of software called password management software. And what that does is it creates a unique password for you, so you don't have to think of a password, for each website or service that you create an account for, because this can now run into hundreds. And we're told not to write them down, and we're told not to make them the same or easy, you know, derivations of one another. So password management software creates unguessable, unique gobbledygook email addresses, but you don't have to remember them, because as you then go through the internet, it fills them in for you as you go. So that's number one. That's worth considering doing. And the other thing is something called second factor authentication. So when you authenticate yourself, you type in a password. That's one factor. But if someone gets a password or guesses your password, then they're in. But with a second factor authentication, that means that it has to be something that you know, a password, but also maybe something that you have or something that you are. So something that you have could be your fingerprint or your face recognition, or it could be something that you have. They might have to send a code to your phone, and then you type in the code, and that acts as two layers of security. And that's something that we should do. A lot of websites allow us to do it now, and wherever it's available, we should be doing that, because a password on its own is not sufficiently secure.
Right, I've got a couple of things on this. That when it offers me, if I'm going onto a website and set up a password, do you want my complicated one that it's got for you? I always say no to that, because I think, well, if I then come into work and I want to log into that website, how am I going to remember XY7423? You know, that how does that work? Because it's not transferable, is it, to other companies? It's all right on your phone, and if you're going to look on that website all the time on your phone, unstuck, don't you?
Yeah. So what you can do is, so there's two pieces of software that I suggest people take a look at that both have free versions. One is called LastPass, LastPass, and the other one is called 1Password, with the number 1 and then password, or one word. Both have free versions, and what you do is essentially you create an account, so you can log on to that account on different machines, and then log off again. But whilst you're logged on, what you're doing is you're unlocking the vault full of those passwords, and that's why you have to protect the vault. Yeah, and then you lock it again. And the other thing you can do, you can get something that looks like a little USB stick. It's not a memory stick, it's got a little fingerprint touch on it as well, and you plug that into a USB port, and again that can act as your second factor of authentication. So you can plug it into USB, touch it, and it will unlock your vault, and you will go and you will not leave traces on the machine that you've been working on. So I mean, it's a very good question. It's not, you know, none of these things are perfect solutions, I have to say, because by putting all your passwords in one vault, that's a single point of failure. But then if you protect it with two factors, you should be all right. But there are no perfect solutions to this. In the end, I think we'll have to do away with passwords completely because they're not very secure. It may just be biometrics, you know, face and fingerprint and some combination of, you know, what and who we are. But until then, these sorts of systems are better than just using a variation of the same password on 100 different sites. Because the problem is, when you get hacked, but let's say you've got a, you know, an account with Twitter and it gets hacked, and you've used the same password on your bank account, or God forbid, on your email address. If they get into your email address, you know, you can go to a website and say, I've forgotten my password, send me a reset link. Yeah,
and
that comes to your email address, so they can actually lock you out of your account, or if they're clever, not lock you out and slowly steal your money and your identity without you realizing it over a period of time, whilst allowing you to
see.
Yeah, but
I need
to put a long song
on and get home and get this sorted. Now I'm in a panic.
Yeah, it's a good thing. And one of the other things that password managers tend to do is that as you type in the existing passwords as you go about your business, if they think that your password is particularly weak and guessable, it will tell you and invite you to upgrade that password.
Yes, so I'm getting that a lot. So clearly I'm bad at passwords.
It needs to be a bit longer, combination of lowercase, uppercase, numbers, and maybe one or two symbols like hash or exclamation or question mark, you know, some combination. But the thing is, the more random it gets, the harder it is to remember. Hence the reason to consider using password management software.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm jotting that down and I'll go home and have discussion with my husband about that. Thank you. Good stuff. Have we got to our first gadget of the week?
Yeah. Okay. So two gadgets today. Both of them are computers, but very different types. One is from a company called Minis Forum, or Minis Forum, M-I-N-I-S Forum, all one word. They specialize in making these tiny little mini PCs. So if you're familiar with a Mac Mini from Apple, it's a bit like that, but even smaller and more svelte, I would say. This one's called the X35G. It's great in that it's very affordable. It's currently priced in dollars. It's $399, but it's actually very good money for what it is. So imagine a very small desktop PC, maybe, you know, 6 inches square, something like that, and about an inch and a half tall. Now imagine it's got some fast memory in it. Imagine that it's got sufficient connectors on it to allow you to connect up to 3 monitors at the same time. And one of those connectors can also be used to attach super fast storage on it. So if you need to expand the storage internally, you can put 3 different types of memory in there to store all your information. And it comes with Windows 10 Pro, and it will support what's called a 5K monitor. So you may have heard of 4K television, you know, the new standard in high definition television. This one can actually support 5K. So it gives you really good quality. The Wi-Fi is the latest type of Wi-Fi, so it's super fast. The Bluetooth is the latest type of Bluetooth, which means it doesn't use much energy. It has a good range. Basically, an all-round good computer. I've given it 4 out of 5. My only caveat is that currently it's on sale via a crowdfunding website called Indiegogo. And there is always theoretically a small risk in buying from a crowdsourcing option. So what I would suggest people do is, by all means, have a look at it on Indiegogo. It's called the X35G. But I would wait until it appears on Minis Forum's own website, minisforum.com, and consider buying it from there. It might cost a bit more at that point, but actually it will still be a good price, and it's safer to buy not from a crowdfunding website. You know, these crowdfunding websites where you basically are, contribute to their cost of actually making it, and then eventually you get the machine.
I see what you mean. Yes.
They have a good. This particular company have a good record of delivering, but still, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that there are risks in buying in that way. Every now and then some people can get caught out, not with Ms. Forum, but with others. And therefore, going to their website and buying it from there is great. And we looked at one of these the other day, which was built for gamers. This is much more designed as an all-purpose home or business computer, and it looks great. It's in this sort of like space grey kind of colour. It looks a lot like a Mac Mini, but it's about a third of the price.
Ooh,
so
lovely.
I was tempted by that. Do we have time for another?
I'll do the next one next, I think. I'll have a tune, and I'm going to jot down what you've said so far, because I'm liking this, and change some of my passwords.
Okay, there will be questions at the end. You do know that,
okay. You had a second one for us, didn't you? But just before you get to that, can I throw in a tech question? You
sure.
Said there'd be questions you weren't expecting from me.
This is
Tom in Wokingham, who says, I'm annoyed to hear that Google Photos is going to stop allowing for unlimited free photo storage next year. Are there any good alternatives that I could switch to?
That's a good question. So this is the thing about Google. They provide all these free services, but because they're free, they feel it's their absolute right to discontinue them at any time. And I would actually caution people about doing things like, don't build your business on a free service from Google or anyone else, because it tends to get taken away. I mean, it depends on what sort of user you are. I mean, for example, if you were an Apple user, you could, for example, use iCloud. There are services that you can use, like WeTransfer, that also have got storage capabilities. If you've got, for example, Norton Internet Security, that some versions of that come with free cloud storage as well. So I would say, rather than going and, you know, wanting to pay directly for something, you might already have a service such as your antivirus and so forth that might have that capability already. So just look at it already. It's a bit like insurance. Often, you know, we don't realize we've got certain insurance covers in place, and we buy it again, or we fail to buy it at all. So just check to see what you've already got, because you might find that there's an increasing number of services that have got cloud storage built into them, and I would do that. The other thing I would say about cloud storage is just be aware that although it has the benefit of being off-site, so let's say you did a backup of your computer and God forbid there was a fire or a burglary and your computer was stolen, because you've got a backup off-site in the cloud, that's great. So that's a really good thing. The downside of using that sort of storage is that it's not under your direct control. So the two risks are, one, it can be hacked, there have been cases of that. People's iCloud accounts were hacked and their personal photos were stolen and published, for example. A lot of these servers are in other countries, typically in the United States, and those companies have to hand over the data to the government on request or on demand. So if you've got something that's very sensitive, you should consider whether or not it's best to put it in the cloud. And if you do put it in the cloud, encrypt it before you send it. That's to say, scramble the data on your computer before you send it up into the cloud to store it there. And then even if someone gets into it, they won't be able to understand it. It'll just look like gobbledygook to them.
Okay, if they got hold of my photos, they just have loads of the back of my head, because the kids, they've worked out how to get into my phone and just keep taking loads of ridiculous pictures.
You know, that could be kind of quite art house, couldn't it? You know, pictures of Kirsten's,
I wish
back
it was.
Of her head.
Right, what's Gadget of the Week number two then?
Right, so Gadget of the Week is, this is another computer, but it's a very different type of computer to the one we talked about. It's from an organisation called the Raspberry Pi Foundation, Pi spelled P-I. It's a English organisation based in Cambridge, and their whole remit, they're a foundation rather than a, you know, profit-making company, their whole remit is to try and promote understanding of computers and help new generations of young people in particular to become interested in computers and learn skills. And it's a bit like what happened in the 80s when the BBC launched the BBC Micro as a platform upon which kids could learn about computers for the first time. And the Raspberry Pis that they produce are typically these little credit card-sized circuit boards that you can load an operating system on and learn how to program on them and learn how to do robotics or artificial intelligence and all these sorts of things. They're not designed to be very high power computers, they're not, but they're designed to make it easy to, you know, connect to the physical world with, you know, so you could have motors or thermometers or switches or, you know, all the sort of sciencey type experiments you can do. You can also use them as general purpose computers, but the barrier has been that there are these little bare circuit boards that you have to kind of find a case for and a power supply for and stuff. So what the Raspberry Pi Foundation have done now is they've launched the Raspberry Pi 400. And what they've done is they've built that little circuit card into the keyboard. So imagine a keyboard that's sort of 10 inches wide, a small little keyboard, similar size to what would be built in to, say, a laptop computer, but just the keyboard, not the screen, not anything else. So this thing, you can buy the whole kit for just under £94, or if you've already got your own mouse and power adapter and cable, you can buy it for £66.90. That's a fully working computer delivered, including VAT, for £66.90. And it's actually a great way. It will do all your basic stuff, like, you know, word processing and spreadsheets and stuff. It runs a version of an operating system called Linux, which is, you know, a free operating system, which is very capable. Mac OS software is built on Linux, and that's why it's so solid. But in addition to that, as I say, you can use it to connect to all sorts of things. And so if you've got a youngster and you just don't want them just tapping away on the phone all day and learning nothing, something like this is really nice. It's an all-in-one design. The computer's built into keyboard. You just plug it into a mouse and a screen, and away you go.
So did you say it's credit card sized?
So the internal card, the computer board itself is the size of a credit card, but so you can buy those separately, but that's not this. What they've done here is they've built one of those little cards into the keyboard. You would plug it, so it's all built in, and you've got the sort of ports on the back. So it's about, the whole thing is about the size of the keyboard of a laptop, not the laptop itself, just the keyboard of the laptop. It's got a series of ports, connectors along the back, and it just looks like a keyboard with the computer missing, because the computer's built into it. And because it's low power and it doesn't generate a lot of heat, you know, it's quite easy to do. You just plug it into the chargers for mobile phones. You can just use one of those to power it. So it looks much neater than using one of the credit card size devices, but it's just so cheap. Like for £70, you can have a fully functioning machine, as long as you've got a screen to plug it into and a mouse and a power supply, you know, away you go. And I just think that's a great way of learning, and it just encourages people not just to spend all their time playing games on, you know, smartphones and tablets, but actually to learn something. And it's just really, it kind of fires up the imagination. Although it's designed, I would say, for younger people and students and so forth, actually there's a lot of older people who maybe missed out on the computer revolution the first time, just want to find out what it's all about. And just learning how to program a computer is a skill that's been lost. And when they did it with the BBC Micro, when the BBC did that in the 80s, it spawned a whole generation of some of the finest programmers and computer scientists and geeks in the world. I mean, we became a world leader with that generation of people in this technology, and the Raspberry Pi Foundation, I think, is doing good work in helping that happen again for Britain to sort of, I hesitate to use the term lead the world, but have some of the best people in the world, because it fires their imagination when they're children and teenagers.
And Justin, I've got an 8-year-old, so in terms of the younger age end, is that the right age around that?
Oh, yeah,
eight?
Absolutely. Yeah, I recommend just have a look at the Raspberry Pi Foundation's website, because they've got a lot of resources there, learning resources and examples of what you can do with it. And I just think it's kind of like a no-brainer, because although you can do a lot of these things on smartphones and tablets, because they do everything and they're all singing and dancing, and they tend to be packed full of games and movies and all this sort of media that we consume, we become passive consumers of these devices, whereas something like this, it's inviting you to sort of roll up your sleeves and do something interesting with it.
Great stuff. Really good gadgets this week. Thank you very much.
Four out of five, as with the X35G from Innisforum, both 4 out of 5, which is almost the highest I give anything. Nothing gets 5.
Wowzers. Thank you very much. Lovely to chat to you. There goes Fevzi Turk up there. He is the gadget detective. If you want to find him on Twitter and follow what he does on there. That might have sorted me out for Christmas.